Hey there. Welcome into another episode of the Bandwagon Podcast. I'm Brian Moline.
I'm Lisa Braltz.
John Steinbacher.
Glad to be back with you again after a hiatus, as we have hit the fall of the academic year once again. Too bad there's nothing happening in sports right now, huh?
Literally nothing.
Yeah, nothing at all. just kidding, of course. There's a whole lot going on that we'll discuss here. And why don't we just get right into it? Holy U.S. Open, Batman. That was one of the most bizarre tennis finals I think you'll ever see for a myriad of reasons.
Were either of you actually watching it?
I was not.
In the time?
I just have seen clips and highlights. I still have not watched the whole thing.
Because it was really interesting to be sitting there on my couch. I'd made a date with myself, like I'm gonna watch this final. It's gonna be great. I had watched Osaka play Madison Keys and beat her soundly. A really impressive player. I'd never seen her play. I was just like, this is gonna be super exciting. And Serena, of course, had been playing well in the entire tournament. So what I thought was interesting, even before any of this happened, was before the first ball was even served, the commentators were talking in very sort of hushed tones about whether Osaka would be able to overcome her, you know, idolization of Serena Williams and be able to play. And sure, they had played earlier in the year at Indian Wells, and I think Osaka had won, but Serena was not in the shape she is now. And just there was so much drama being built up anyway about this match that really had something to do with the younger Padawan not being able to, like, fly with the Jedi Master, if mm-hmm. I may. So I thought that was really interesting. And then Osaka comes out serving and wins the first 2 points. And they were all like, oh, okay, this could be interesting. Because, you know, one thing about tennis commentators is they tend to change sides depending on whatever is happening in the match.
Oh, yeah.
So they'll be, like, totally pro somebody until they start losing it. And then they'll be like, oh, the other person's like. So it's kind of like that. But Osaka wins pretty definitively, I would say, in the first set. Second set starts. It keeps going on. Serena's clearly not thrilled with the way she is playing. That was obvious. I mean, but it wasn't like rage. It was just more like, you know, oh, my God, here I am in this final, and this player is beating me, and I need to try some other things. And none of those things were working. So what I saw was all of a sudden she's talking to the chair umpire, and she's right away, I couldn't hear what he said, and they have everybody mic'd now, or very mm-hmm. There are mics on the court, so you can hear a lot of what's going on. You know, he had covered his microphone, so, you know, the crowd couldn't hear. But all of a sudden she was like, I am not a cheater. You know, you can't accuse me of cheating. I didn't see anything. He was just, you know, or he was just giving me the thumbs up or whatever. Meanwhile, in the booth, the commentators are all like, you know, this happens. There's coaching all the time happening. So they were even saying this in the booth. And then Chrissy Evert, I guess she goes by, they showed a replay. And she's like, well, he was coaching, obviously. I mean, look at him. You know, that's obviously what's going on here. And then it sounded like she's like, you owe me an apology. And he said something. And she was like, okay, thank you. Like, she did say, okay, thank you, because I'm not a cheater. I have a daughter, etc. They go back to play. And something happens. She, you know, ball goes in the net, or she hits it out or whatever, and she throws a racket down. So then she gets penalized for that. I mean, how many times have we seen people throw their rackets down in disgust? Many times. The point penalty is not going to be a surprise to anybody. But for whatever reason, and this, keep in mind, this is my recollection. I haven't watched the match again since this all happened. But she just kind of went back on. So maybe he never did apologize to her and she was still mad about it. I'm not sure what happened. Anyway, that was when the match completely really changed, because, you know, they'd be playing these points. And they were kind of going back and forth. But it still wasn't really working. It became pretty clear to me as a tennis layperson that Osaka was going to win the match no matter what. Like, she was on. She was incredibly focused throughout all of this. Like, she just was sort of playing her game. But then the whole, you know, it was the equivalent of, I want to speak to a manager. Like,
yeah.
She, you know, she got the folks who manage the tournament, I guess, came mm-hmm. down to talk to her. And she was very, Serena, I'm talking here, very upset about whatever else had been going on. If there had been more discussion between her and the chair umpire, it wasn't really clear to me. Anyway, so then he docks her a game, and I think Osaka may have given up that next game to kind of even things out, but then she won, and then she wins, and she, like, immediately cries and covers her head, which a lot of players also do, but I just feel like it was just so stressful. What I don't know how she felt about how what had gone down. It's just the stress of having... I know how I don't like confrontation. Like, I've never liked political debates, like watching them, because people get really mean and nasty with each other. And I felt very uncomfortable with this confrontation between Serena and the chair umpire, even though it was like he clearly had some kind of beef, was choosing that particular moment to enforce a no coaching thing that had not been enforced at all in the entire tournament. So he picks a final, women's final, which I thought was weird. But then Serena's coach, who is he, does he still have a job? Because she's like, I didn't see him. He wasn't coaching. And then he, in the interview immediately after the match, he talks to Pam Shriver and he's like, yeah, I was coaching. We all do it. So he kind of undercuts her. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It was just really complicated and it felt very strange.
Yeah, very strange indeed. And I think the biggest issue that most people had was that, yes, the chair umpire was calling things by the, you know, the letter of the rules,
right,
that interpretation. The issue was that how often are those things actually called? How often are players docked a game? And certainly, you know, no umpire is going to like being called a thief. But I think we've heard going all the way back to John McEnroe and Jimmy Connors, chair umpires called a whole lot worse
than
that.
Oh, so much worse.
And not being docked a game, maybe, you know, maybe a point or something, but being docked a full game seemed pretty extreme, at least from what I can gather from the clips I've seen from reading about it. By the way, I'll direct readers. I thought Sally Jenkins in the Washington Post did a great job of kind of summarizing everything that happened and why it was such a big deal.
Well, it was never in a final either. Like, you know, the internet has receipts. There are people all over Twitter who are like, well, McEnroe was kicked out of the Australian Open in 1990 and Ilie Anastasi was whatever. And that's fine. That was a long time ago. That was never in the final of anything, you know. And it was never about stemming from an issue like this coaching from the box, which everybody does. It's never enforced. And, you know, so things just like were problematic right from the beginning of her coach telling. And I forgot to mention what he was telling her to do, I believe, was to draw Osaka to the net because she's not comfortable at the net, which she then started to do after he coached her and she didn't see it. So I'm sure it could have been a coincidence. Maybe she sussed it out like, ooh, Osaka doesn't like coming to the net right at that exact moment. But it did change. It did start. She made some changes and she got some points. So who knows? Either way, in tennis, Djokovic was having a cow in one of his matches about, like, his rackets were in the wrong order and he's screaming at his bench and everybody's shaking up the bottles of, like, magic stuff that he drinks or whatever. Like, there was communication. How is that not coaching also? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't pretend to know. John, you're a tennis guy. Speak.
I don't coach or get coached. It could really help. I think what's interesting about this, obviously, you know, there's a lot going on. There's the now made very clear by an Australian, what do you call those?
Editorial cartoonist.
Oh my God.
There's racial undertones going on. And then there's, of course, sexist undertones going on. I think, you know, overall it's, as I think a lot of people have said, but it's unfortunate because Osaka should have this really nice moment, mm-hmm. Winning her first Grand Slam, a young up-and-coming tennis player, which, honestly, this sport could really use.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all being overshadowed. And I think the other thing that probably needs to be mentioned is just a couple of weeks ago, there's a huge deal because the chair president of the French Open, you know, made a big deal about this outfit that Serena Williams wore during the French Open and hinting that it was too sexy, which is ridiculous because she was wearing, you know, like a compression because she was worried about getting blood clots because she just had a baby and had issues with that. So, I mean, you know, it's there's sort of this undertone of throughout tennis that Serena Williams is probably the greatest tennis player of all time, and yet she still has to deal with all this crap.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's, of course, going on in the back of her head, too, right? I mean, you can't she can't separate that even in the finals. And then, you know, this chair umpire business. So, I mean, my two big takeaways are, A, it's really unfortunate for Osaka that all this happened and she doesn't just get to enjoy it. But the other thing is, man, tennis really needs to get its blankety-blank together.
They do. They do. And you just reminded me of something else, too. Like, during the trophy ceremony, Serena was, like, quit booing because everybody was booing as mm-hmm. Osaka was getting her trophy, which totally sucks. Even if, and I'm sure they weren't booing her. They're booing
right. the chair umpire,
yeah. and the, you know, officials and whatever. But still, and Serena was like, quit booing. You know, she played great, whatever. And I have to think that, you know, in this moment when Serena gets docked for coaching, when really it's the box that should get docked and not the player, she's already losing and is already frustrated. It is just like, read the room, dude. And I heard that he is retiring after this season. Is that right? Like, he had one final axe to grind or something. It was it was just, I'm not sure if that's true. I'll have to follow up. But yeah, I just, the whole time I was watching it, it was like a train wreck and it's happening in real time. And, you know, I thought maybe I should watch it again, but I'm not sure that they would put an unedited version of it, you know, of how it went down. I don't know, because like I said, some of the commentators in the studio were editorializing as well. Like, while she was being coached, that's what was happening. Like, I don't know. And you're right. As it unfolded and went out on Twitter, that's when the racism and sexism really started. You know, no one really knows exactly what was going on in the chair umpire's mind, but the reaction to it was incredible. Mm-hmm. It was incredible.
Yeah.
And that cartoon, what I also found interesting about that cartoon is that Osaka was depicted as a white woman with a blonde ponytail,
yeah.
which I thought was really strange.
Yeah. She's, of course, part Japanese, part Haitian.
Right.
And, you know, had some blonde tips in her hair.
Exactly.
But yeah, it was just a very, very bad cartoon, I thought. But anyway.
So there's that.
Yeah, so there's that. That whole thing. And again, recommend that Sally Jenkins piece if you want to catch up and get a perspective of someone who is in the arena, taking it all in, longtime respected sports reporter for the Washington Post.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we are in September, which means the Major League Baseball season is coming down to the wire. We are talking on Wednesday. As of this moment, the Cubs have a 2-game lead in the National League Central over the Milwaukee Brewers, 3.5 games over the St. Louis Cardinals. Things getting a little tighter in that division race, John, than maybe we thought they might a week or so ago.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing about baseball right now, is all the, you know, in general, teams kind of go up and down. But if you go up and down at the wrong time, I mean, who knows? By the end of the season, the Cubs may have a 5-game lead, as they did just a couple weeks ago. But right now, they just have a 2-game lead, and they happen to be playing Milwaukee. If they would have lost last night, they'd be tied for first place. And, you know, we'll see what happens by the end of the month. But it's so, as long as the Cubs come up top, it's fun. I mean, I'd much rather have this than like a 16-game lead. Or how? What is Boston, the second best team in Major League Baseball is the Yankees, and they're like 8 games behind Boston or something ridiculous like
yeah.
that. So, but there's a lot of exciting races going down to the wire. The NL West looks like that's mm-hmm. going to be an exciting one.
East is pretty close.
I think the Braves have kind of pulled away.
Last I saw, it was about 4.5, but maybe it's even more now.
In the American League, Boston, the Indians have pretty much wrapped it up, but I believe the West is still up for grabs.
Yeah, I think the A's are at least within shouting distance of Houston. You know, the Yankees are pretty much locked into a wild card, and you know, whoever doesn't win the West is probably the second wild card unless something crazy happens.
But yeah, I think as a Cubs fan, you know, in the moment, I'd rather have a comfortable lead, but it's nice. You know, I hate to say it, but I kind of feel bad for Milwaukee. They've been pretty good for a couple of years and still haven't made the playoffs. So this year looks like even if they don't win the division, they'll still win the wild card, which would be probably a one game at this point, looking at a 1-game wild card between the two teams in the NL Central who don't win it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would probably play the NL Central champion
in
because
the
of the best.
Yeah, so best record.
All three of these teams, the Cardinals, Brewers and Cubs are probably all going to be playing each other quite a, I mean, so in the playoffs, more than likely, which will be very interesting.
I have a question about the Cardinals. Mm-hmm. So weren't they terrible? Weren't they having like a rough season and then?
For them.
For them?
At the time they fired their manager, they were one game over 500.
Okay.
And they were, most people thought they were underachieving a bit. So yeah, they were having a bad season for them, at least compared to what people thought they should be doing. Now, keep in mind, the Cardinals haven't made the playoffs the last two seasons.
Right.
They have had winning records, but haven't made the playoffs.
So is the guy they fired, had he been the manager for a while?
Yeah. Since like 2012.
Mike Matheny.
Yeah.
Right. And so they fired him. Mm-hmm. Did they put an interim in, or did they hire a brand new person? And has that made a huge? Has that been the difference?
Well, the difference, I don't know, but it certainly has been a difference. They promoted a guy who had been the bench coach. He is a guy who was in the Cardinals organization for a long time, named Mike Schilt, and he had been in the organization as a minor league coach for a long time. Promoted to the major league coaching staff in the last year or two. And so essentially, they've been kind of grooming him. The current administration of the Cardinals, John Mozeliak, the team president, really liked this guy, put him on the major league coaching staff, I think in part to try and be an influence on Matheny as manager. And it just wasn't happening. So finally, they made the change. And then about a month after they put him in as interim manager, they made that move permanent. So mm-hmm. he's now going to be the manager for the next couple of years at least.
And that was somewhat controversial because they have a very small sample size. And mm-hmm. actually, since they've done that, I mean, they're fine. But they haven't done as well as they were. They were sort of rolling really well. And they were in second place close to the Cubs, and now they've sort of fallen back. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is Matheny seems like he was never – he was a very well-respected catcher. Mm-hmm. Came up and then he took him to the World Series, or they didn't win the World Series with him.
Yeah, let's see. I think it was in his second year they got to the World Series and lost it to the Red Sox in 2013.
And if you ask most Cardinals fans, it's sort of they won in spite of him. He's never been super popular. Mm-hmm. He's kind of a very old school, and he got into some trouble this year because he had one of his relief pitchers sort of spying/inside man on other younger relief pitchers, which did not come across well.
What do you mean?
Basically, he was kind of like a spy for the manager almost, like telling him, oh, well, so-and-so didn't get his work in, didn't get all his throwing in that he was supposed to do, didn't do his running, that kind of stuff.
I'm making a face as you're describing this to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, good riddance to him. He actually was on Fresh Air a couple of years ago. He wrote some book about young sport. I don't know. I'll stop talking.
Well, but I'll find a link to that.
Yeah, we link it to Fresh Air. Yeah,
that seems familiar. Yeah. Like he was familiar to me, and I just remember being not following baseball this much this summer, being surprised that they fired him. But then I learned that they had not been playing that well for mm-hmm. them, as you say.
Yeah. So the Cardinals made a change, and look, I mean, they're in good shape to grab a playoff spot. It's not certain at this point, but they're in good shape.
Get in the playoffs, you never know. Mm-hmm.
So I want to ask you guys just real quick before we move on from current baseball. Since the last time we were on the air was May-ish, mm-hmm. I think, any big surprises in baseball for you this time?
The Oakland Athletics are a huge surprise right now. They're in a wild card position in the American League West and only a few games behind Houston for first place. Mm. I don't think anybody expected them to be much above 500. The Tampa Bay Rays are also well above 500, but they're quite a ways out of a playoff spot. And again, I don't think anybody really expected them to have a very good season. And they've done this interesting thing where they've kind of gotten rid of their starting pitching. They basically have the majority of their games are relievers only. A guy will start, they call him the opener, and he pitches an inning or two, and then they just do a bullpen game with the guys pitching an inning or two at a time.
I think I'm most surprised that the Dodgers in the West haven't sort of run away with it. They have by far on paper the most talented team, and then they traded for one of the best players in Major League Baseball with Manny Machado, and they're still struggling. They might at this point they're not in playoff position. They might not make the playoffs, which as a Cubs fan is exciting because they have one of the best starters in baseball. When you get to the playoffs, that's potentially 2 to 3 wins a series. But yeah, I'd say the fact that they're struggling. I mean, Arizona's been good, and I think Colorado being good is a little bit of a surprise. They're both potentially wild card teams, but I think I really expected the Dodgers to run away with that division.
I'd say the other surprise on the disappointing side is Washington, the Nationals. I think they were going into the season probably the clearest pick, maybe other than Cleveland, to win their division, and they are at or below 500 as we speak right now, and have traded off several of their better players, including Daniel Murphy, to the Cubs. They're definitely a disappointment. And then on the positive side, I think Atlanta and Philadelphia in that division maybe are both a year ahead of schedule for what was supposed to be a little rebuilding for them.
Yeah, we've talked about Philadelphia's manager, kind of a weird guy, and I think a lot of people didn't expect or want him to succeed based on some of his
eccentricities.
Yeah, I guess that sounds like a weird word, but either they're winning in spite of him or he's a genius.
Both.
I'm gonna Google the Phillies managers. Now I can't say it.
I don't know.
I think this might have been an episode where you weren't here, and man, be careful how far down the rabbit hole you go.
I'll be careful. But thank you for the warning. I appreciate.
Some of it is safe for work, but you might want to be careful who's around when you.
Okay. Yeah. Nice to know.
Yeah. The other thing that I thought we'd want to talk about is we do touch on Illini sports, and I want to talk about the soccer team who have really struggled the last couple of years and are off to a pretty good start. They beat two ranked opponents. Mm-hmm. And they lost to one, and then I think they lost to DePaul, which was probably...
Yeah, DePaul was probably the one loss that wasn't great, but yeah, the other loss was to North Carolina, who's always in the top 10 in the country.
Are they sort of on the rise? Are they a young team with players coming up, or is this sort of...
I think, from what I can gather, I think they've got kind of a mix of seniors who've been there a while, who are finally starting to get it, come together a little bit. And they've got some pretty talented young players that have come into the program as well. It's a pretty good mix. I think they're definitely back on the rise. Now, we'll see what happens when they get into conference play. That's mm-hmm. what they start this week, which is always, I think, the big test. 5-2 going into conference, I think things are looking pretty good. So anyway.
The other team that I want to mention is the women's volleyball team.
Yes, yes.
Kicking booty.
They're off to a great start, and we had Coach Thomas.
Yeah,
it's
all
okay.
Right. So close, John.
I like to pronounce it as the French do.
Thomas.
We had him on when he first started, and he had some tough shoes to fill. But this team looks legit.
Yeah, they really do. They're undefeated, number 8 in the country, I think.
I was just going to Google the rankings, NCAA volleyball.
They're definitely undefeated, and they've beat some ranked teams, but I mean, I'm sure they'll have some tests. There's a few good teams in the...
Oh, yeah, Nebraska, I think, is the defending national champion. Penn State's always good. Minnesota, several others. I think the Big Ten, I think, usually has 7 or 8 teams make the NCAA tournament, so it's...
Yeah, BYU, number 1. It's not really a name I hear often with volleyball, maybe because I just don't pay that much attention outside of our conference and like Stanford.
Yeah, how's Stanford doing?
Number 2.
There you go.
Lots of Big Ten, though, man.
What's coach's name?
Kevin Hambley.
Yeah. Good for him.
So we've got Nebraska, Penn State, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Illinois. All 5 of them right in a row, starting with number 4, Nebraska, all the way through number 8, are Big Ten teams. So that's 5. So half of the top 10 are Big Ten teams.
Yeah, that'll play.
Well done.
Cool.
All right, very good. So that's what's happening right now in sports. What's happening with the bandwagon, need to discuss that as well.
Are we going to do this now? No. Are we going to have a discussion?
Yeah, we got to have this tough conversation, Lisa. After, this is, episode 56?
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, this will be the final episode of the bandwagon. There's just, all of us do this as a labor of love, as something that we do kind of extra to our full-time jobs here at Illinois Public Media. And I think right now for all 3 of us, it's just something's got to give. And unfortunately, I think the bandwagon is what's giving right now.
Yeah, it's really sad because from its very humble beginnings as an idea thrown around in passing in the newsroom to this like epically awesome thing that we've created now. It's sad to see it go, but I also have to say a lot has changed in the last 2 years, certainly in the last year, just with the sheer amount of news. Brian runs our newsroom, the WIL newsroom, and hosts Morning Edition and is extremely busy because there's just never a shortage of news, and it's an election year, so it's really heavy duty. John is, you know, in fundraising mode and constantly concocting new and interesting ways to gather more members into the fold. And that's a tough job, a lot of work, a lot of cats to herd. So, you know, that's a lot. It's a lot.
If only more people would have donated through the bandwagon.
Yeah, then it would just have been so much easier. Your job would have, you know, gotten so much easier. And for me, of course, I'm running a couple departments and, and you know, but the thing is content development and podcasting is kind of one of my departments. So I feel really weird about sort of sunsetting this idea. And I think it was a really good idea. And one thing that I would like to see happen with our newsroom someday is maybe having a little more, you know, I don't want to say thoughtful sports coverage because that implies any sports coverage that we've had has been thoughtless. And that's not what I mean. But certainly maybe something worth looking into certain issues. There's a ton of stuff we never got to. You know, I think of the purple binder full of ideas, and there are a lot of things we never got to that, you know, if someday there's a sports-friendly reporter or, you know, if you and all your free time, Brian, wanted to investigate a story, you could do that. And my hope would be that bandwagon sort of, or even coverage on the 21st, we've had Alan Montesilio, who's the producer on the show before, if the bandwagon in some way has impacted even just a little bit how we treat sports here at the station, then I think I see it as a success. I really do.
Yeah, for sure. So thanks to both of you for helping make this thing work
Thank
for as long as it did. It's been a good run, that's for sure.
We still got a little bit more content here. We got to save that.
Well,
for
we're being nice to each other here in the middle, and then we're going to do
feeling.
Oh, and then we're going to be
Mean
to each other.
Like, does anybody need a hanky after all that? Are we having a group hug?
I just wish you guys would have told me before the podcast. This is our last one.
Right.
Yeah.
So as you might expect with kind of the final episode, we're going to take just a few minutes to run through a few of our favorite segments that we've had on the bandwagon over the years. If you don't mind, I'll kick things off.
You start.
Brian, why don't you go ahead and start?
Thanks, John. One thing that I did in my previous radio life was I did a lot of sports talk stuff, and in doing that, I had built up, you know, quite a few contacts from people in the sports media world, and I was glad I was able to use those connections to bring a few of those people onto our show. A couple of my favorites were always Will Leach, who went to school here at Illinois, grew up in Mattoon. Love Will, even though he is a Cardinals fan. I didn't hold that against him.
Not too much, anyway.
No. So it was always good to talk with Will on a variety of topics. Also enjoyed bringing Craig Calcaterra into the mix, who writes for NBCSports.com, kind of heads their baseball coverage. Craig's a former attorney, so, you know, pretty sharp guy, and always brought a unique perspective to his sports writing as well.
And his Twitter account, which I really enjoy.
Absolutely. But I think my favorite segment was during 2016, the Cubs World Championship season. We were actually able to bring on a member of the team, a guy from Tuscola, went to Parkland College, Spencer Patton. He's pitching in Japan now. He came up and pitched some for the Cubs in 2016, was part of that World Championship team. That was just a lot of fun for me to be able to talk to a guy who's in that clubhouse on a regular basis and just kind of get some inside knowledge there. That was a lot of fun. So we'll bring you a little bit of that conversation with Spencer Patton.
So I was born in Urbana. I grew up in Tuscola, Illinois. My whole family still lives in the area there. I don't remember a whole lot, but I still have a lot of friends in the area. I used to come back in the summer months when I moved away. I would come back and hang out with my friends and my dad lived there, and me and my mom moved, and so I would always come back and see my dad, and I had a bunch of friends and family to hang out with. So it always felt like I was still a part of that community. And there's a friend of mine I had lunch with yesterday out here in Pittsburgh. He's from Tuscola, and he was telling me how Tuscola still claims me. So, that's nice, and it's always nice to go back for family and holidays and visit with people there. But, you know, I grew up an Illini fan, still am. And so I think it was just, typical Central Illinois upbringing, nothing crazy, just grew up in a small town.
Does it ever get weird for you when you talk, or did it ever, and does it now ever get weird for you to come home? Do your friends treat you any differently? Is it as you were starting to pull away and develop a career in baseball, what was that like in terms of your relationships with people?
Yeah, they may have treated me differently, or played the 20 question game, for the first couple weeks when I came home, mm-hmm. but. For the most part, it is kind of difficult to get jumped back into those relationships because, I'm kind of in the dark with how their lives are going. And when I come home, it's almost like I missed out on what's going on. They all have their own agendas and their own gossip, or if you will, and I'm just kind of left out of the loop, and it's hard for me to get back into that and jump back into those relationships. But it's not that bad. I try to find time for my wife, and I both try to find time for friends that we don't get to see that much during the season. And mm-hmm. off season, we get to hang out with a bunch of people and get acclimated back to their lives, and just find out what's going on and how they're doing. But it is kind of a slow start at first when I come home in the off season.
Yeah, it's like being on tour with a rock band or something for 9 or 10 months out of the year.
Yeah, it's like, the thing is we, my lifestyle versus their lifestyle is totally different. So mm-hmm. it's hard to relate to with what they've got going on and what we've got going on. They always ask about how our life is, and it's hard to explain because they may not always understand.
Right.
Spencer, for a guy like you, you pitched your college ball at SIU Edwardsville. You were not, a real high-round draft pick. And as you're going through that process, at some point, did you, in conversations with your family, did you talk about, if it doesn't work out by this particular time, then I might just have to hang them up and try something else?
Absolutely. My wife and I had many discussions, and I'm very thankful for her because she's been a true rock for me, kind of telling me to stop acting like a baby and go after it. I've definitely had those conversations. Like I said, repeating rookie ball 2 years in a row at the age of, 23, 24, however old I was, I definitely had thoughts of, this may not be what I should be doing. I'm not making any money at all. I've got an apartment to pay for back home. We've got bills that I need to pay for, and this just isn't cutting it. So, there were definitely thoughts of me, hanging them up right then and there and going to find a regular job. But I always did tell my wife, and we did have a plan that if I wasn't in the big leagues by 30, then that was it. It's time to put that aside and find something new. So I'm thankful for her and for her support through those years in the minor league, the plans that we had together and stuck with them, and worked out that I didn't have to wait till 30.
All right, so that's that was Spencer Patton, a member of the 2016 Cubs World Championship team and now pitching in Japan. Lisa, what do you want to bring to us here?
What do I remember? So many fond memories of our time together, all you guys. And I loved Will Leach also when we had him on. Interview with Craig was great. We only used you for your connections.
I know.
That's the only reason. So.
Quite all right.
And that interview with Spencer was cool. I had a couple, three favorites myself that I really enjoyed, or things that I thought, maybe we were a little bit earlier than other people. One guest that we had was Isaac Musgrave, who actually has done a lot of work for WILL and Illinois Public Media on the video side. He is also sort of our inside source for weird camera angles during the NCAA Final Four. And when we spoke with him, we talked a lot about what it was like to set up for that kind of an event. So I really liked having that sort of behind the scenes perspective. Really enjoyed that. I thought, gosh, it must have been a couple of years ago by now, maybe even before that, we had a discussion about esports and e-athletes. And that was kind of before this huge explosion in e-athletics and scholarships at schools and facilities being built for e-sports. So I feel like we were ahead of the game a little bit in our discussion. As I recall, John was the one who brought that topic to us. So nicely done. I would never have even considered it. And both John and I are sitting here going, we don't understand it. We don't. I get it, sort of, but not really, like in terms of treating it as sports. But that's just because I'm middle-aged.
Yeah, my son is like, Dad, do you know what Fortnite is? And he's like 7. I'm like, kind of. And he's like, well, you lame.
Yeah, loser. No, it was Minecraft like 5 years ago, right? Yeah. Now it's Fortnite. Anyway, but my one of my favorites and the one that that I selected to have a clip played from was when, not too long ago, actually, that we interviewed Ella Mazur, who played soccer for the University of Illinois. Actually, she played soccer in the Urbana Park District in Little Illini, now called IFC or Illinois Football Club, walked on to the U of I team, ended up having and still is having, as far as I know, a pro career that's taken her all over the world. And last year, when we talked with her, she was just getting off a plane, I think, at O'Hare.
Yeah.
And we made contact, and she was sitting on this knowledge that of she was moving from her pro team in Sweden, FC Rosengard, to somewhere else, and she couldn't talk about it, but she was hinting at it, and it was really fun to have her sort of announce that on the podcast, and we can play a little bit of that.
Well, and recently we read an article, about some of your hopes here for the next couple of years, Ella, and maybe for some who don't know, in the last couple of years you've married Aaron McLeod, outstanding goalkeeper for the Canadian national team, and it sounds like you're trying to make it happen that you would be eligible to play on the Canadian women's national team as well. What can you tell us about where you're at in that process?
Yeah, I mean, I've had a couple conversations with John Herdman, their coach, and, you know, with women's football, you can never really know what's going to happen after your contract's over. But all I can say really is that, you know, with signing with this team, I go till 2019, which is exact timing for the World Cup. We've been talking to FIFA a little bit as well, and the thing about FIFA is, I don't know, you know, some lines are a little blurry, and this is a very blurry line, because usually you have players like Lauren Sussman, who's from Wisconsin, her father or grandfather was Canadian, so she got to switch her whatever nationality. And for me, this is, I think, one of the first cases ever where it is a marriage. FIFA's biggest, I guess, red flag is that if they do it for me in this way, that they could say, oh, this guy married this woman, and now he can play for Germany. So that is their... I guess what they're saying is the holdup. But as of now, we're in talking with FIFA, and if they say yes, then I'm sure John, or through my conversations with John Herdman, that he'll allow me to come in to camp and see how it goes.
Hi, Ella. This is Lisa. So I have a question. You just mentioned where you were going, and actually I learned that you were leaving Rosengard from my daughter, who has been a big fan of yours for a long time. So she was actually
awesome.
The one who told me. But she said one of the things that had given her pause when I told her that we were interviewing you was that you had liked a tweet. So funny that this is how we talk now. You liked it. We saw that you liked a tweet from Laura Harvey, who is going to be working with the new the Utah women's team, and
yes.
Where she had said that she was excited to get started, and that gave my daughter pause. I think for a second she's like, because she said Ella hasn't announced her next move yet, but this kind of gave me pause. Like I think she was hoping that maybe you were going to come back and play in the United States, especially because the women's game I think is gaining some more traction here, just as soccer in general is slowly starting to gain some traction. Is that something you would ever consider, is coming back and playing in this country? I mean, obviously, you're going to the best places in the world and you need to be there. But, you know, a lot of European male players come back now to MLS to play. That's kind of sort of the joke, even though they're still really vital players. They're maybe older than a lot of the other players in MLS. So yeah. Would you consider coming back?
I don't know. It's a hard thing because, you know, the MLS guys that come back, they come back because they're getting millions.
True.
Unfortunately, the NWSL is not the same for women. So for me, the reason I am continuing in Europe is because, you know, if you don't play for your country, the biggest thing to win is Champions League. And, you know, if you look at the last 2 years, the team I'm going to has won Champions League. So for me, that's to win something and to put my name kind of in the records. I don't think any American Canadian has played that. Or has won something with this team. You know, of course, you can say Alex Morgan played with Lyon, but not like a full season. So that's exciting. But NWSL, I mean, I think it is growing. You know, as of now, Aaron is looking for a team, and a big thing is the NWSL. So I don't know if I will be the McLeod that's in Utah or NWSL, but I hope one of us, there's a good chance that one of us will be there and playing, depending on what happens. But no doors are closed, for sure.
All right. Yeah, always fun to talk with Ella Masser. She was always somebody I enjoyed covering when she was at Illinois and in her professional career and beyond, and she certainly made CU very proud.
Oh,
for sure.
I was, like, fanning myself a little bit during that because, you know, we watched her play in high school and college. My daughter, who played soccer all the way through high school locally, sort of, I wouldn't say idolized her, but really did look up to her in terms of fitness, toughness, you know, getting right back up when she could to play again. And I just thought Ella was a great person for my daughter to look up to, and I look up to her too.
Very good. John Steinbacher, what were a couple of your favorites?
Well, the one that I'm going to make into my own podcast, which, please, nobody can steal his ideas, and I'm never going to do it, I love crazy sports injuries like sneezing Sammy Sosa or Glenn Allen Hill, who was scared of spiders and woke up in the middle of the night and hurt his back. Of course, these guys are all steroids, so that probably helps. But that kind of stuff I love. So what I would like to do is a podcast focused. Each episode is on one weird sports injury, and then you bring in like a healthcare person to explain how it happened. Getting older adult in the U.S., I understand these injuries, and I think that'd be fun, you know, a podcast about sports injuries and how you can save your back. Usually it's your back or video games.
Especially as you get to our age and older, it's the back. That's the one that gets you.
Wait, should we do that, you guys? No, just kidding.
No, but when I see that rising up the charts, I'm going to be a little pissed. over the last couple of years, you guys brought me in later, and I appreciate it. Thank you very much for including me, so thank you both. Sort of the overall picture of sports and sports coverage has really changed significantly. One of the things I thought was really interesting when we brought in John Greenberg from The Athletic. The Athletic is sort of buying up sports coverage throughout the country, trying out a new model, which is sort of the same old model. You pay for local coverage. But in this day and age, I just think that's really interesting. We talked to him. That was sort of a little, I don't know, view into what's happening. It's obviously still happening. It'll be interesting to see if The Athletic can continue to survive and thrive. I know it's sort of a startup, and those things have a way of just suddenly going away. But it's interesting that people are getting paid to do the work that they were trying to get paid to do instead of doing it for free, which a lot of people do. I would say, you know, as much as we've tried to cover other sports and do other things, the NFL remains the sport in this country that controls a lot of the sort of geopolitical conversation. We've talked about how football, more than any other sport, involves all kinds of, like, army and military terminology. But so I thought, for me, the piece I wanted to bring up was I had some good friends of mine who were super huge football fans, way into fantasy football. Every Sunday was like, that was their religion. That's what they did. And then they just stopped watching, and we talked to them about their lives and how, you know, not watching football had changed things. And I just think that was really interesting. And, you know, we continue to see, you know, Colin Kaepernick is on the still making a big difference. And, you know, people aren't watching football because of the violence, and people aren't watching football because they have the audacity to kneel. So, I mean, this is continuing going on. So I just think that's an interesting story to revisit that's still sort of a mirror of sort of what's going on culturally in our country.
Ben and Sarah Curtis, is that right?
Ben and Sarah Curtis, no. Caleb and Sarah Curtis.
Ah, so close.
Caleb, you can and Sarah edit Curtis. Go ahead, try it again.
Caleb and Sarah Curtis, is that right?
That's right. And now they live in Ireland, interestingly enough. So I wonder if they watch Irish Gaelic.
Rugby. Gaelic
yeah.
football?
Yeah.
Gaelic rules football.
Yeah.
There you go. Awesome. So here's a little bit from Ben and Sarah Curtis. Caleb and Sarah Curtis.
I want you to leave that in so we can send it to him.
Thanks for being here, guys.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
And as I understand it, both of you have been football fans, big football fans in the past, and maybe now not so much. Maybe, Sarah, let's start with you. How has your fandom changed over the years?
I think I started getting super into football when Caleb and I started dating. It was kind of part of our courtship, I would say, watching football together.
Very romantic.
And, you know, it's fun to watch football, to be super into it. It's kind of weird being, like, the only woman sometimes in the fantasy football league. But then you get, like, extra kudos if your lineup is even just decent. So... I think for us it kind of changed when we watched the Frontline documentary.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that was pretty mind-blowing. We actually watched it over at John's house.
Disclaimer.
It was a two-parter, and we watched the whole thing. And it's horrifying to see what is happening to the bodies of these athletes. But that's not really new. Like, we knew that, but to have it laid out in such explicit detail at the time in our life when we watched it was pretty, like, it was pretty influential, because we had, I think you were pregnant maybe when we were watching it.
Yeah,
I
can't remember if I was pregnant or if we had just had Doug. Mm-hmm. But you know, it takes some dissonance to be super into football, right? You have to be like okay with knowing that some of the men who play have done really horrible things. You have to be okay with kind of the culture that supports the celebrity, even at the high school level and the college level, that sometimes allows really horrible things to happen. And so, you know, you're kind of playing that game with that dissidence, because you kind of put it in your mind like that's not the game. You know, like that's the culture and there's issues with that, but like the game's still fun. And, I mean, it is really exciting to watch. It's a really...
It's a wonderful game.
I mean
football's
done...
really, you know, when you just look at it, the complexities of it, you look at how the game has changed over the years, how it's become this sort of, you know, this craft of real, you know, technical, you know, planning and execution, all that. It's amazing to think of in those terms. But the soap opera around it seems to be what kind of interests people, and how the NFL has marketed itself. Honestly, I think the same things that sort of like once I get beyond the concussion thing and just like what happens to the bodies of these men, I really start thinking about how it affects me as just a human being who's in the audience. You know, that when I'm watching a game and I see a big hit, I get excited. You know, it like normalizes this level of horrifying violence, you know. And I grew up a Bears fan. I guess I'm still a Bears fan. I just don't really watch them. But I mean, I think that my friends and family can attest that I'm a pretty like rabid fan, and so that I know that I have that capacity when I'm like engaging in it. And then I sit back and I think about, you know, I just kind of think about what my values are. There's that incongruity, and it's difficult. I mean, it's just difficult to see myself in that context.
So one thing that I wanted to ask you guys about football, since you bring it up, is I think when Brian and I started doing this podcast, I was still watching football, or at the very least college football. And now I do not watch any of it unless I happen to be in a place where it's on. So, for example, the other night we were at a local restaurant and the Illinois football game was on. So, and I happened to see like the most insane hit on one of the guys. He had to be helped off the field. It looked like a knee. I don't know if you guys know what I'm talking about.
He scored a touchdown.
Yeah. But the hit, everybody in the restaurant was just like,
His season is over.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. I didn't follow up, but it was terrifying, and it really reminded me of why I don't watch football. Are either of you guys still watching it all, or how much attention are you paying to
just
the game?
Just little bits. I mean, I watched a little bit of college football last weekend because I had some time. I was just hanging around the house, and so I watched a little bit then, and I watched a little bit on Sunday, but I didn't watch any complete games or even any complete halves, I don't think.
I don't watch it like I used to, but I still, especially, I mean, I'm not really that interested in it, but I do have some sort of deep-seated Illini pride, so I'll watch those games at least until they start losing by 50 points in a couple weeks here. Although I'm going to the Penn State game, so that should be interesting. And I actually watched the Bears game this week, but then, as you pointed out, Lisa, for various reasons, quickly realized why I don't do that anymore.
Oh, Bears.
But yeah, I would say there's no doubt that in the last 4 or 5 years, the amount of time I watch football has reduced a lot.
Well, and I think also, at least for me, I mean, it's part of it is football, and part of it is there are so many other choices and sports happening. There, I can watch tennis tournaments and soccer that I could never get, like, even 3 or 4 years ago. So I'm still watching sports, tons of sports. It's pretty much all we watch. But football is not what I'm choosing to watch in the fall and winter.
Yeah, I mean, one of the interesting things that I would say as we're sort of wrapping things up as the podcast is I've got young kids and stuff, and I just don't watch sports as much as I used to. It's mostly occasionally a social thing, and you know, now we eat dinner, put the kids to bed, and usually I can watch maybe the last couple innings of the Cubs game, but then it's also like Katie, my spouse, maybe wants to watch something that's not the Cubs, and we just have sort of the one TV, so I'll end up watching like on my phone the Cubs while we're watching, you know, some Netflix show. It's hard. It's hard to keep up, but maybe you don't need to. I don't know.
All right. Well, I think we've been putting on.
Man, what an ending.
Can we? I mean, I think sports is great, and I wish I had more time for it. I didn't mean to end on a downer. I just think, you know, you have time for what you have time for, and you can still keep up and be part of the culture. Well, with just listening to some podcasts.
Well, I don't even, sports, I'm still going to watch and listen, but I think, like you say, there's just so many other things going on, not just within sports, but in general, that people are picking and choosing. And that, like, let's face it, of all of these people who are watching people play esports on YouTube, they're not watching football.
No.
They're not watching basketball. So I'm just curious to see what the future holds.
They may be watching basketball. I think demographically, basketball is very popular among people who play.
The youngsters, the whippersnappers.
Kids.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, y'all, it's been real. And maybe we'll be back behind the microphone again sometime in the not too distant future. Maybe both of you can come in and pitch on Morning Edition one of these days.
Oh, I think in 2 weeks I can do that.
All right, very good. So I'll be on behind the mic with John, maybe with Lisa again here soon. But
okay.
In the meantime, we got some folks to thank.
Yes. First of all, we want to thank you, and especially you. And I'm pointing at the world in general. So much for joining us here on the Bandwagon. It has been quite a ride. This episode, like so many of our previous episodes, was produced by Brian Moline, Lisa Braltz, that's me, and John Steinbacher. We'd like to thank everyone who has ever appeared on the show as a guest for hopping aboard. We all talked about some of those people, but that's just a slice. Especially Ben Curtis. Special on-air thanks also go to Roger Blanco, our intern.
Woohoo!
Remember Roger? Hi, Roger. Sorry, I haven't broken the news to you yet as of me speaking this, but I will get in touch with you soon. Also, Travis Tate, who appeared with us several times to talk about basketball. Thank you, Travis. Additional thanks for their support go to Scott Cameron, Jim Kelly, Mike Bowman, and our friends Automatic Empire, who wrote and performed our theme and other music heard within. You will still be able to find us on the web at will.illinois.edu/bandwagon, where we've linked to almost everything we have ever discussed on this podcast, all 55 real episodes. We'll call this a real episode, I guess. We talked about a lot of stuff. So all 56 episodes worth. It's very hard to say goodbye, but bid adieu, we do. And as always, thanks for playing. We'll